This is the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision by guiding them to profitability. On this episode, we have Nick Baer. He is the CEO of Saxby's. And on the episode, we talk about how you don't have to be a coffee geek to run a coffee company. Investing in people, relationships, and the customer experience, and developing a brand that has purpose. I've known Nick for a while, and it's an absolute honor to have him and to finally have him on the show. After hearing him speak numerous times and getting to know him and his brand, congratulations, Nick, and I hope the rest of you guys that are listening enjoy the episode as much as I did.
Let's go!
Hey, Nick, welcome to the show. How's your day going, man?
Hey, Jonathan, my day is going awesome. How about yourself?
I cannot complain. The sun's shining where you are, the sun's shining where I am, so I can't complain too much. But before we get into the heavy-hitting questions about entrepreneurship and business, we have to talk about the important stuff. And being in the food industry and the service industry like yourself, I'm excited to hear the answer. So imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. Where are you going to eat, and what are you going to order to make your day complete?
Yeah, you know, maybe this is a pretty special thing that I can say, that I get to do exactly what you're describing pretty often. I think part of that is I've learned to celebrate successes and how important it is to do things that you enjoy to do. You know, when I was younger, I used to think that I had to like earn the right to like go out for dinner. I had to earn the right to go and like do something nice. But now I realize that treating yourself well is a really, really good thing. It puts yourself in the right mindset. So that perfect day for me, and I'm going to be pretty specific here because again, this is something that means a lot to me, is I live in Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia. I come out of my apartment. I get to do, my wife has a Pilates studio right at the bottom of our building. So I do Pilates. I run over, get iced espresso from my Saxby's on the corner. I do breakfast at a park overlooking Rittenhouse Square, two eggs, two pieces of sausage, and my home fries. Lunch will be Sweet Green. And dinner will be probably a couple martinis and then an amazing dinner at Vernick, which is right in my neighborhood as well. So I don't know that you could go any better with each of those sort of food and beverage concepts and those brands, and being able to do it all in a really cool neighborhood like Rittenhouse in Philadelphia.
Oh, absolutely. And Vernick is probably, if not one of the best restaurants in Philadelphia, hands down.
It's, I mean, some will tell you it's one of the best restaurants and even wider range than that. I mean, Greg Vernick, the chef and namesake, just like won our James Beard Award for the Mid-Atlantic region, which is like the Grammys for chefs. So it's a pretty impressive place.
Very cool. So the first real question, let's get right into it. Nick, tell me about a time that you felt lost or blind in business, and how did you overcome the obstacles?
Oh man, you're blind, obviously, is a pretty strong word because you know I've been in business now for 12 years, and you know blind spots are obviously things that you're really in a tough position. So over 12 years, I've definitely had a lot of bumps. I've had a lot of valleys to some peaks, but blind spots obviously are a pretty big deal. So I would say that you know one really critical blind spot for me was, it was actually my birthday. So it was March 28th, which I'm not a big birthday celebration person. So I'm actually sort of surprised by myself that I'm saying my birthday out loud. But it was important in the context of this answer. But I started taxes on my credit card foolishly. I had no business plan. I had no outside capitalization. I actually had very little experience in this industry. So I started on my credit card, pretty much maxed out my credit card. I had a deal lined up with a real estate developer in Philadelphia to be my first investor, allow me to pay some bills off, capitalize the business, and be able to set it up for growth. And I had a meeting here in Philadelphia that I, you know, was concerned didn't go the way that I wanted. And I wound up getting an email as I was sitting on a plane here at Philadelphia International, getting ready to fly to Atlanta, which is where I started Saks and where I was living. And literally, I refreshed my phone as my phone was supposed to be off. The wheels were literally coming up off the ground. And I see an email from the guy who's going to be my investor. And he was pretty much like, hey, Nick, thank you so much for, you know, this consideration. But I've decided I'm going to pull the offer and not make an investment in the business. And literally at that point, my you know, cell phone reception went to zero. There was a time before there was even, you know, Wi-Fi on the plane. So I was stuck just sort of reading that email over and over and over. And quite honestly, thinking for probably an hour and a half on that plane that I'm like, man, this business that I love so much and I invested so much in is probably dead. So I needed that investment. So that was a real blind spot. I felt really, really helpless. And I got home to Atlanta to, you know, my apartment where my then girlfriend, my now wife was, and she describes it as the saddest she's ever seen me. I've been described as someone who doesn't see the glasses half full or half empty. The glass is always overflowing for me. So that was the saddest she had ever seen me. And yeah, I felt sorry for myself. I look back on it now and I'm disappointed in my reaction, but I felt sorry for myself. And she did a pretty good job of kicking me in the butt and said, you either sit in the corner and cry and you know, feel bad for yourself and let the business fall apart, or you could do something about it. If you know that that's the right deal and that you should move the business to Philadelphia, then you need to figure out a way to be able to make it happen. And so, you know, her pep talk, you know, led me to, I don't think I had enough room on my credit card to actually buy a plane ticket, but fortunately I had a lot of miles. And so I booked a flight on miles to come back to Philadelphia. I pretty much stalked the guy who then eventually became my investor. I pretty much just wore him down and made him make an investment in Saks. And we lived to see another day.
That's awesome. That's a great story. And shout out to the wife for making it all happen and grounding you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Saks, to people who are international, and the people that are not necessarily local to this region, Saks is a massive success in the Philadelphia region and surrounding areas. Could you speak to the growth and the surges that you've seen the past couple of years with Saks?
Yeah, you know, we're starting to finally hit our stride. You know, we've had a lot of successes in the past, but I think that we're starting to build something that is truly differentiating and is scalable. And I think, you know, there's a couple reasons for that. I was not a coffee drinker when I got in this business. I love the opportunity that this business provided. I love, you know, one, any and every consumer is both welcome into a cafe like Saks and can generally afford it. And I'll come back to that in a second. And two, we could employ almost anybody. This is not a job or a company where you've got to have a degree or you have to have a 4.0 or you have to have a particular area of expertise. Yeah, this is a business that is truly an opportunity for everybody from a consumer and an employment perspective. And that's what I was always attracted to, is about the human side of this business. But you know, I didn't know that I needed to double down and really, you know, build a culture that was about that. I thought that those kinds of things just sort of worked them out and came naturally. So over the last few years, we've done a really good job of defining who we are. What is our culture? Our mission is to make life better. We have six core values, like we're a community serving our community. We embrace being odd, which is outgoing, detail-oriented, disciplined. You serve yourself by serving others. And we've been really, really steadfast at only hiring people and training people and empowering people that believe in that culture and hold us to a higher standard and make us better as a result. And then, you know, secondly, we have used that as our growth vehicle, make sure that we find partners, real estate partners, now university partners who believe in the power of culture and human experience. And when we don't have those things, don't go in that direction. So we've learned to not try to be everything to everybody. And so over the last couple of years, we've been able to leverage the fact that we have 515 people that work for Saks that are tremendous culture fits. So I get text messages all day or Twitter messages from people being like, Nick, I just went into the Saks at 30th Street Station or Temple University and I forgot my credit card and the barista said it's on me, or I spilled a coffee all over myself and they took care of me, or they just told me the funniest joke and put a big smile on my face. Like, that's such an amazing experience. None of that is a surprise. That's by design. Like, we work really hard to get culturally aligned people into our company to provide a great place to work, B, really memorable experiences that drive loyalty in our business. So that's one. And then two, we have created a program called our Experiential Learning Program, where we partner with universities for their undergraduate students to design their own Zaxby's. And then their classmates, other students, then run the cafes exclusively for full academic credit. And that's a partnership that we've rolled out at about a half a dozen schools so far. And they've just been tremendous win-win-wins. Wins for the students because they're getting experiences that they can't get anywhere else. Win for Zaxby's because we are investing a lot of money and making a social good with this. And then the wins for the universities, because universities right now are desperately looking for opportunities for their students to be able to have a return on their investment for their education. So getting the skills necessary to be able to either go create their own businesses or go be able to create and make an impact in the workforce. So long answer to a short question, like why are things taking off so much over the last 2 years? The combination of having a really well-defined culture and having 500 plus people that really resonate and live that culture every minute of every day, combined with a very strategic growth model that allows us to sort of flex the muscles of our culture, but also provide something that's really needed right now in the economy, which is giving young people real opportunity to do something special.
So you have 515 and growing people that work for you, under you. At what point in time did you felt the need that you had to change your leadership style? And did you ever have any problems in the early going with your career as a leader? And what would you say is your leadership? And what were some of the things that you learned early on and to what you are today?
I'll be honest, John. I think I struggle with that even today. You know, my leadership style has to be very different today than it was, you know, 2 years ago, probably 2 months ago. I mean, we're growing so fast. I mean, there was a time where I had to sort of be everything. I had to be a barista. I had to be a trainer. I had to be the head janitor. I had to be the CEO of the company, the head salesperson. And my nature is, if I see something that needs to be done, my natural instinct is to just do it. I'm sort of a blue collar CEO, and that I'm a, you know, get my hands on it, roll up the sleeves and make it happen. And now that we're a much larger company, I've got to be a different CEO than that. I've got to be someone who is quick to be able to help in situations, but I've got to be much more strategic. And if I get caught in the weeds and I get caught spending hours doing things that someone else could probably do better and do faster than me, and I take my eye off the ball from a strategy and a competition and a talent development perspective, that's not good for the company. And so quite honestly, I think it's something that I struggle with every day. Every day I try to make myself a better leader. But the thing that really grounds me from a leadership perspective, and every one of our cafes is run by what we call a CEO, a cafe executive officer. And we don't call it a CEO to be cute. We call it a CEO because no one has ever asked a CEO, what are your job responsibilities? Like, literally everybody understands what a CEO's job responsibilities are. They're everything. You're fully responsible for that business or that business unit 24/7, 365. And so we take oftentimes young people and teach them to be CEOs. And one of their first meetings, mentor meetings, is with me. And the best advice I can give them is, the greatest leaders are two things that are oftentimes not sexy. People think, you know, being super smart is sexy, or being mysterious and not knowing what you're thinking. I think those are traits of bad leaders. I think there's two things that really matter from a leadership perspective. One, you have to be tremendously authentic. Be exactly who you are, and be exactly who you are consistently. So I think authenticity and consistency is really important for a leader. And those are two things that I think I'm naturally good at. But then how I spend my time is something that really evolves. I had to be a very different leader at 50 employees than I am at 500. And if, God willing, we're able to employ 5,000 or 50,000 one day, I'm going to have to continue to evolve as a leader. But I'll never, ever shake being authentic and being consistent. I'm not going to pretend to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm not going to pretend to be the biggest coffee expert or know finance better than anybody else. but I'll be Nick Bayer, real Nick Bayer, and very consistently Nick Bayer every single day. So I think that that's the side of leadership that I'm doing well, but evolving and being more strategic, higher level CEO is something that is just a constant evolution and a constant challenge.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great advice. I appreciate that. One of the other questions that I have is one of the hardest things to do in business is to achieve your first quote unquote 100 customers. And your business model and what you're doing is a lot different than the service-based businesses or the SaaS models. You're building stores and lifestyle and a brand and et cetera. And you can answer this any way that you want. But the overarching question is, how were you able to achieve your first 100 customers? You can go the angle of actual customers purchasing coffee or the angle of what you're doing in order to get the stores and the amount of stores that you have.
Yeah, so I definitely get the nature of your question. I mean, it's definitely probably a little bit more on like the tech side of the service side, the 100 customer. I would equate that in my business, like a bricks and mortar F&D operation, I would equate the first 100 customers in like a tech business to the first 10 locations in my industry. So what do you do to get to your first 10 locations? Because what you do with the first 100 customers in a tech business is you've got a proven concept. You've got a concept that actually works, you know? And so I would say subjectively that's having 10 locations. So if you're a company like Saxby's, getting to a position where you have 10 locations that work, yeah, you've probably proven that you've got a concept that's got some staying power that's actually there. And the reality is it's going to come with a lot of trial and error. It's going to come with a lot of failure. And I think that's oftentimes the biggest thing that entrepreneurs just are not prepared for and don't deal well with is failure. You know, we have so many failures. I mean, I've had a couple of things I've had to deal with this week that are just like head-scratchingly bad decisions, oftentimes that I'm at the center of. Like, how did we do something so stupid? Or how do we miss such an opportunity? And as an entrepreneur, if you're not someone with thick skin who's got the humility to learn from your mistakes and pick yourself up, you're never going to get those first 100 customers. You're never going to get to those first 10 bricks and mortar cafes or restaurants, whatever it is that you're building. So trial and error and understanding that this is an absolute marathon is, I think, one is incredibly important. And then two, and I was really slow to the second one, was taking a mistake and then learning from this mistake to do the complete opposite. So not taking, I screwed this thing up, let me do a 180 and move in another direction. Oftentimes you only missed by a degree of 5% or 10%. And taking those things that you screwed up and using it really sort of move forward instead of moving a completely different direction. I think it took me far too long to actually understand that. And now I'm almost like, I'm almost like excited for mistakes. Like I almost get excited to see how something gets screwed up so that I can dissect it and say, what can we learn from this? Because I'm really, really excited to diagnose, like, do we have to do a 90-degree turn? Is this a 2-degree turn? Like, what exactly do we have to be able to do there? Because I've realized that our biggest mistakes have oftentimes turned into our biggest opportunities. We take 10 steps forward with a big mistake. But in my early years, when I don't think I dealt with failure that well, one mistake I oftentimes probably multiplied its negative output because I just didn't deal with it very well.
So I've done my research, and I know that you used to play baseball. Do you think your baseball acumen of the mindset, your calculations of 2% to 90 degrees, those to me come from the state of a person that is a sports guy and played some sports back in his day. So do you think that idea of baseball helped a little bit with what you do in business?
No doubt. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of athletics and not just as like, because sports are cool. I realize that, you know, a lot of who I am is because of sports. So my entire life I played quarterback in football, I played pitcher and shortstop in baseball, and I was a shooting guard in basketball. Like that was so important to me because in each of those things, I never went undefeated in any season that I ever played. So I inherently had to deal with loss. I inherently had to deal with, you know, playing poorly. But in college, I was a starting pitcher. So I played baseball, and you inherently stand in the middle of the field. And 99% of the time, if your starting pitcher does not perform well, your team will lose. So your starting pitcher has so much on the shoulders. And I do think that, I don't think I realized that when I was first starting Zaxby's or when I was growing it, but when I get smart people like you asking me, you know, interesting probing questions like that, I started to realize that I think I was somewhat conditioned for the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, having been, you know, particularly a pitcher in baseball. You know, like I had games where I played well, and I had to know that if I blew up my ego and I went back on the mound the next game, I would get lit up if I had too big of an ego. Or in situations where I gave up 3 runs in the first inning, I could either cry about it in the dugout or go out and shut them down the next inning and give my team a chance to win. So yeah, the sports side definitely helped me, because I think the hardest part of entrepreneurship, I think we give people too much credit for having this genius idea. Like, oh my God, experiential learning is the most genius idea. I think the bigger credit for successful entrepreneurs is just being able to deal with getting knocked down. You know, deal with, I've got this amazing sales pitch. I worked really hard to be able to get in front of Jonathan. I'm going to make the sales pitch, and he hates it. Mm-hmm. Not many people are able to pick themselves back up, learn the way that they need to learn from it, turn 2 degrees or turn to, you know, 25 degrees, but those that are those that move forward. You know, I think that we want to focus on the sexy thing, like where did you get the idea from, when it's the non-sexy things, which is just picking yourself up day after day, knowing that you're going to make mistakes. And now when I have a company the size of ours, when I have a bad day, if I come in here and I'm angry and I'm surly and I snap at people, that's going to have this negative effect across the entire company. So dealing with failure today, at the size of Saxby and the number of team members that we have, is very different than when it was only 3 of us. You know, I've had to learn to deal with failure and carry myself in a particular way so that we can learn from and move forward from those failures.
So the next segment that I have, and I hinted at it off air, is just a quick segment I call Explain That Gram. So I did my due diligence and I've done my research, and I found some of the best pictures on your Instagram channel that I've found. And I would love for you to speak to those, maybe what was in your mind when you posted it, et cetera. The first one, and I can say that out of the brands, and I'm not just saying this because you're in front of me right now, the rebrand that you recently went through from what was Saxby's to what is Saxby's is absolutely incredible. I think it's one of the most trendy and millennial-centric brands that are out there today. This is a selfie of you. Hopefully you can see that, of you with the new brand. And I think this may have been day one of the official launch. What has the rebrand, the logo change, and everything else in between done for you as a person, but also from a business perspective as well?
Massive. And I appreciate your kind words about that reveal. Christmas, New Year's of 2016, you know, as I was sort of doing my end of the year recaps and just sort of evaluating what we did well, what we didn't do well, like setting my goals for the next year, I got to a position that over that holiday, and it was a slow build, but I really realized that over that holiday that, quite candidly, I started to really hate our brand, like our actual logo. I actually started to really dislike it. One, I felt like it was boring. It was bland. Our color scheme was like a faded maroon. It had a coffee cup in the middle of it. The name was Saxby's Coffee. So I didn't think the iconography of it was that great. And then two, when I was evaluating who we had become as a company, I realized that our logo and our name did not reflect that whatsoever. You know, it's just, we saw ourselves as a hospitality human experience business, but our logo was a coffee cup. And I quite honestly, I just couldn't shake it. I went to sleep that night. I woke up the next day and I hated the logo a little bit more. I went to sleep that night. I woke up and I hated the logo even more. And finally, by the time I came back to the office January 1st, I was like, this isn't going to go away. And if I don't like the logo, that's probably not a good thing for us as a company. So we hired two really great brand consultants out of Los Angeles who were, you know, sort of fit the demographics of our core consumer, but we're really pretty unfamiliar with Saxby's because of where they live, that we had no cafes around them. And they came in and just did a tremendously deep dive, focus group our HQ team members, our cafe level team members, our guests, people that went to cafes that were competitors of ours, to really get a feel for who are we, where do we hit the mark, where do we don't, where do we not hit the mark, where do we fit in the industry, where do we not fit in the industry, where's the industry going? And they came back with some really powerful things. One of which was drop coffee from your name. Yeah, the people that love Saxby's for so much more than coffee. And we've talked to a lot of people that if Saxby's was positioned properly, they're going to your competitors when they could probably should be coming to you if you communicated your brand better than you did. And secondly, because we weren't quintessentially in simplicity, you know, simply a coffee company, we really needed to change up our logo. And so we hired the Heads of State, which are a really tremendous design company here in Philadelphia. I really wanted that work to be done locally. And they took a lot of the work that came out of those focus groups. And everybody, primarily that worked for us and that were our loyal guests, talked about how Saxby's was this uplifting experience. It made them feel good. They were taken care of by people that truly, genuinely thought well of each other and of their guests. The coffee was good, so it stimulated them. And so everything about what we are is uplifting. And that's where the hot air balloon sort of got sketched out. And we needed to go to vibrant colors. You come to my office and there's music playing and people are having fun and there's dogs in here and there's like people that don't even know they're just having meetings in here because they're friends of friends in the company. We're a people business and we need vibrant colors to sort of communicate that. So we went with the strong black, we went with fire engine red, the sky blue. And when it was first shown to me, we knew we had something special. We started to show it to our team members and everybody lit up with it. And then April of 2017, we debuted that. And that's triptych, the Instagram that you showed, is those are three different muralists here in the city of Philadelphia that we commissioned to create murals for us in a triptych style. And that's at the front of my office. And so that was 5 a.m. the day that we debuted our brand publicly, our new brand evolution publicly. And yeah, I was really proud of that moment. My team gives me a hard time because they think that I'm not very good at selfies. I disagree. I think that selfie was actually pretty decent, but they still give me a really hard time.
I'd rate it an 8 out of 10 for sure.
I'll take it. You know, I'll take it. It's I'll definitely take that. And you know, what's been cool is we're coming up on 1 year of the brand evolution, and I love just sort of scrolling through Twitter and seeing people. Like yesterday, I saw someone say, "I'm sitting on a train." Yeah, presumably an Amtrak train. They probably grabbed a Saxby's at 30th Street Station. Like, I'm just staring at the Saxby's cup and it's making me smile. Meaning like the brand is positive and energetic and uplifting and it makes them smile. And that's when you know it's powerful branding because that's really what we were going after. So I'm really proud of it.
That's awesome. So you mentioned this young lady in the very beginning of the episode, but here's a picture of, you know, your family. And going through the feed, I noticed the theme of posts between you and your wife and your son and other family members. What does it mean for your family to, and what has family done to you, for you to further you, to ground you, et cetera? So could you just speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, you know, and I'll try to be brief. My parents were teenagers when they had me, and they pretty much took the first jobs they could get. And every job they've ever had, they essentially dislike. You know, I was talking to my mom earlier today, my dad got a new boss, and you know, there's already concerns about this new boss. Like everything about work as I was growing up in their house was stressful and uninspiring. And you know, my parents really pushed it upon me to A, get an education, and B, do something that you love. And I genuinely feel like I was put on this earth to make a difference in people's lives. Like, it makes me feel good. As much as, like, I can go out and buy a new sweater, and I'm like, man, I love this sweater today. I love the sweater a little bit less tomorrow, and I love it a lot less a month later. But when I can go out of my way to be able to go and provide a job for someone who the last six months of their life in a homeless shelter and watch them build their career, that feeling, we call it serve yourself by serving others, gets stronger as time goes on, unlike a materialistic thing. And so, you know, my family, their relationship with work, my mom and dad, their relationship with work I wanted my relationship with what I did for a living to be the complete opposite. And it's really special. My son is 4 years old now. So that picture is, he was probably about two, and he's holding my wife's hand, and he's holding my mother-in-law's hand in the other hand. And, you know, he's walking, he's about five steps away from Saxby's Rittenhouse, the 20th and Walnut in that picture. And we joke that Luke, my son, thinks everyone in the world works for Saxby's. Like, he probably thinks you work for Saxby's, Jonathan, if he meets you. He probably thinks my mother-in-law works for Saxby's. And B, he thinks it's the coolest place that there is. And that's a really, really special and powerful thing for me, because I wasn't raised with work being that same thing. You know, I dreaded for my parents that they had to go to work 5 days a week, you know, and like, God, it must be like going to prison because they don't like what they're doing. They're not being treated well. My son's growing up in an entirely different way. He sees that work should be something you love, and that you can do something that makes the world a better place through work. So I'm really, really proud of that.
Yeah, amen to that, man. That is a wonderful story. So thank you for that. This last photo that I have is something that I think not that many people in the world will be able to experience. So you going down the street, you're holding your son's hand, and you're with your family, and all of a sudden you step by, you walk by a trash can, and you see this, and you see a whole bunch of stuff being thrown into the trash can of already used coffee cups that are with your brand on it. What is that experience like to be able to walk down the street and see something like that?
It's amazing. I mean, I think that if I wasn't in the position that I'm in, assume that at this stage of my career, I'd be very desensitized to it. I'm not. I'm so, like, in the city of Philadelphia, we'll sell 12,000 cups of coffee every single day. Yet every single time I see someone holding a Saxby's cup, I, like, the hairs of my arms stand up. Like, I'm so proud that someone made a conscious decision to go into one of the places of business that we invested our money in and hired people for and have trained people to be able to put this product out. So it's a feeling that I genuinely feel at this stage in the game, if it hasn't worn off now, it's never going to wear off. And it's a constant reminder of how special it is that, you know, that we're doing. Like, I took, that's what, I think that was actually one of my first ever Instagram pictures. And I remember I think it might've been my wife. So someone close to me was like, why'd you take a picture of the garbage can? I'm like, because when I walked by and I saw all those Saxby's cups in there, that's in downtown Haddonfield, where there's a Starbucks that's been in there forever. I mean, it's one of our first Starbucks in New Jersey. And we opened a Saxby's about a block and a half away. Most people thought we were crazy and that we were going to get our doors blown off. And it's been the complete opposite. We've been incredibly successful there. And so when I walked by and I saw all those Saxby's cups and knowing that there was a Starbucks on the street, it made me feel so good. Unfortunately, a bunch of years later, it makes me feel good when I see one person on some random street in Philly holding my cup. It's a lot of hard work from a lot of people, and it means that we're making people happy.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the final question I have for you is, the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast is defined as a person who may be temporarily lost or blind in business. They're stuck in that headspace of, and they just can't get out of it. To the individuals that are in that headspace, what are three pieces of advice that you would give to a fellow entrepreneur?
So I know one, and I don't know that I'll be able to come up with two others that are as powerful as this first, because defining your culture, why your business or why your product exists, I believe is the most powerful and important thing in any business. And I say that not because I watched Simon Sinek's video, The Power of Why, and I was like, that guy's so smart and he has it right. That's part of the reason. I think that guy is really smart. I think that video was really amazing. But I say that more because I started a business without a defined culture and worked my butt off, and a bunch of other people worked their butt off for 5 years and tried to grow Saxby's without a defined culture, without a defined why do we exist. And I, you know, watched Simon's video, and we eventually changed and wrote our mission core values, pretty much pushed everybody off the bus, re-interviewed, rehired everyone, made sure that we had everybody that was a culture fit in Saxby's, and went back out to battle and competed with the Starbucks and the Dunkins and the La Colombes of the world. And I think you know where I'm going with this. The company that we've been over the last 5 years, where we had a defined culture, and that was a number one, what we did every single day, that company outperformed the first company, the company without that for the first 5 years, 200 times, 200 fold our previous performance. So I got to live it myself. In fact, I was the inaugural commencement speaker for Drexel's Close School of Entrepreneurship, which is the largest freestanding school of entrepreneurship in the country. I got to be their inaugural commencement speaker, which is unbelievable because I feel like I barely graduated college and I didn't know anything about entrepreneurship. I didn't get to learn anything about entrepreneurship. It was a really nice sort of full circle moment for me to then be able to be a commencement speaker. And all I did was talk about the power of culture, the power of, I was in a room full of future business leaders and future entrepreneurs. Don't overcomplicate things. Don't try to figure out how to build the next amazing app or the next Facebook or the next, Sashes or Starbucks. Figure out first and foremost, why is your business going to matter? What is the culture that's going to dictate what you're going to do? And never, ever lose that. I mean, you've probably been in my office, Jonathan, but you can't walk into my headquarters without seeing, because it's 50 feet wide, 20 feet tall, our mission core values sprayed out across the wall. That was intentional because most people expect to walk into a coffee company's headquarters and see a huge coffee bar. You'll see a huge coffee bar in here, but it's the second thing that you see after our mission core values. So when I'm in a blind spot, or one of our team members is in a blind spot, and they're really trying to grapple with what they're struggling with, a company with a culture, with a defined purpose, that will always pull you out of your blind spot. And so I think that is absolutely a number one is blind spot. So if you are out there, you're listening to this right now, and you're like, my business just isn't working, or I don't love what I'm actually doing, why is your business in place? Why is your business in business? Why are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? And if you're not connected with the culture, or God forbid you don't have a culture, you've just revealed your blind spot. You've just revealed exactly what the actual issue is. And I'm living proof of the difference between not having a culture and actually having a culture.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. That's one. Are you gonna let me off easy and let me go with just that one, or do you want me to go with two others? So,
honestly, that alone, if you want to go add two more, you most certainly can, but that alone speaks so much volume. So if you want to end there, I'm cool with it.
I say let's end there because I don't want to complicate it, because I truly want to make that point stronger. Like I'm a adjunct professor at Drexel and entrepreneur residence at Cornell, and I'm blessed to be able to be in front of a lot of young entrepreneurs. As you know, I came out and spoke at Camden a couple times. Like, I love being in front of entrepreneurs, and that is my message to people, is we oftentimes want to jump past that first stage and talk about pro formas and how we're going to sell and how good our margin is and all these other kinds of things. We skip over that. Who is your business? Why does your business matter? What is the culture of your business? And when you look at all these successful companies, and you look at the Apples, you look at the Facebooks, you look at the Amazons, you look at Netflix, guess what they all have? They all have a very, very defined company culture, and they are steadfast to making sure that the only people that are on that bus with them are great culture fits. Every single one of them. And that's not like, they didn't become Netflix and then say, let me write an amazing culture. That was my genius idea when I was 23 years old and starting Sachse's, was I'll worry about culture once I have a really successful business. I was never going to have a successful business if I didn't write a culture. Netflix is successful because of their culture. They put their culture is so important to them, they actually put it online. It's a PDF that every young entrepreneur, or any entrepreneur for that matter, should actually read. So culture is the core of everything.
Amen. Yeah, great. Love your story, Nick. And I couldn't be more appreciative of your time. So thank you so much for talking to us today. The next 30 seconds is all yours to promote whatever you want to promote, what you have going on, how people can learn more about you, your culture of your company, be a part of your journey, and then also go to a local Sachse's to buy. So 30 seconds, the floor is yours.
You know what, I feel like I've probably promoted myself enough on this already, but I would really love for people to understand that Sachse's is a hospitality company. Like, take a second when you go into your nearest Sachse's, or your first Sachse's for that matter, and ask your barista why they work at Zaxby's and why do they enjoy being there and what do they want to do with their career, because hiring the right people and career pathing them and being resources for them to be able to build great careers is really important to us. And so treat your barista like your new friend and get to know them a little bit, because I think you'll be really impressed at how awesome they are.
Very cool. So thank you guys that are still watching and listening, for always liking, commenting, and subscribing. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and head over to theblindentrepreneur.com for more interviews. Being blind in business is temporary, and I hope after listening to the wisdom of Nick today, you are now able to see more clearly. Go out there and execute your vision. Have a good rest of your day.